Grant from RE/MAX Realty Associates, currently handling over 30% of the real estate sales transactions in Champaign County. 352-5700. Nobody sells more real estate than RE/MAX, and they encourage you to join them in supporting public broadcasting. Focus 580 is made possible in part by a grant from Bodywork Associates, this year celebrating their 22nd anniversary. Bodywork Associates has been providing professional massage therapy to Champaign-Urbana since 1982. Today's broadcast is made possible in part by a grant from JBJ Gifts, Home Decor and Collectibles, 723 South Neal, 2 blocks south of Green Street in Champaign. JBJ's offers Christmas decorations including Christmas ornaments, angels, Santas, snowmen and nativities, gifts, collectibles, and home decor items. More information is available online at jbjgifts.com.
Good morning. Welcome to Focus 580. It's our morning talk program. My name is David Inge. Glad to have you with us this morning. We're also pleased to have back here on the program Rick Karch from Rick's Automotive in Champaign. He's an auto mechanic and for a long time now has been good enough to stop by. Well, we generally do this every season, so 4 times a year, to answer questions about cars. If you're having a problem or you have some other sort of general car question, maybe it's about maintenance or safety issues or whatever, just call in and let us know what's on your mind. And particularly if you have the car problem, call in and tell us what kind it is, tell us the make and the model, and give the best description. And Rick will see if he can help you out. 333-9455. That's for Champaign-Urbana. We also have a toll-free line. That's good anywhere that you can hear us. 800-222-9455. Well, thank you very much for being here again.
Sure. Glad to be here.
Appreciate it. We have a caller ready to go. We won't make him wait. We'll go right there. And they're in Indiana on our toll-free line, line 4. Hello.
Hello. I've stopped working, so I find myself driving my car very little and basically mostly city traffic, you know, maybe 2 to 8 miles when I do go out, occasionally in the county, but not much. I'm certainly not doing the 70 a day like I used to. And I've been concerned about, you know, I presume the spark plugs that are in it, that were in the car normally, it's, see, the one I'm talking about is a 95 Buick Century, that they've got the temperature range enough to take care of that sort of thing, but I really don't know. And I'm interested in whether I should change my oil more often. I used to do it every 3,000 when I was on the road a lot. And I was wondering if there's any other things that I should be concerned about now that the car, you know, I've gone sometimes a couple weeks, only put 50 miles on. And occasionally I might do, you know, a little trip, do 100 one week. But most of the time it's probably, you know, 10 to 20 at the most during the week. And they'd be mostly short runs, I would say, also. Thanks a lot.
Okay.
Well, as far as the oil service is generally 3 months, 3,000 miles. Short trips like that, what happens is moisture builds up in the crankcase, which is where the oil is, and it can tend to dilute the oil a little bit. So, but he mentioned that he's taken trips at least once a week of 100 miles or so. So that's going to escalate the temperature and help, in essence, evaporate that moisture. So other than the normal oil service, 3 months, I wouldn't suggest anything else. As far as the spark plugs are concerned, his question about that, with the fuel injection system, it's going to adjust to all conditions, so there really isn't any additional concern there.
Hmm. Short driving, really, it seems like cars don't like that, or at least there are certain problems that you end up with. For example, the thing I think about is exhaust systems.
Yes.
Because there's, when you get the combustion of the fuel, you get some water vapor and it collects in the tailpipe and in the muffler. And if you drive the car enough, it heats up, that evaporates away. But if you don't, you end up with this water there. And eventually what it's going to do is it's going to rust it out.
Yes, it will.
So that's, you know, that's one thing. And I, the only reason I know that is from, you know, from personal experience. But that's one of those things that cars, you know, they would rather get up to some kind of sustained operating temperature. It's a little bit better for
them.
Yes,
it is.
Is there anything other than that problem, that notorious thing about the exhaust system, anything else that with short trip driving you're going to wear out faster than maybe you would ordinarily?
Not really. By short trip, I guess what would normally come to mind is a lot of stop-and-go driving. Mm-hmm. And of course, the brakes might wear out, are going to wear out a lot sooner than if you're on the highway. The other thing on a car that sits a lot, particularly classic type cars that people only drive occasionally, maybe in the winter they literally don't drive them is to make sure that the gas tank is full. If it's half gas and half air, then, of course, moisture is going to form in there, and it will rust inside the tank. Hmm. So you want to keep it full. And that's kind of the same thing if you have a boat or a jet ski or an RV and you store it. You need to fully fill the gas tank.
Okay. All right. Well, here were some other folks to talk with. The next caller in line is in Gibson City on line one. Hello.
Hi, this is Jean.
Mm-hmm.
Dave, I love your show. I have a vibration in the front end of my car. Like when I put a coffee cup in the cup holder, it goes all over the place. And I've had my tires balanced. I've also gotten new tires. I went in to have it aligned, and they said that that wouldn't really help a problem like that. So I'm wondering where else I can look. And then how do you feel about synthetic oil for my particular vehicle, which is a Honda 2001 CR-V?
Well, most of the new Hondas are recommending that 5W-20. But if you want to use a synthetic, there's Mobil 1 makes different oils for German, Japanese manufacturers.
And mm-hmm.
I'm a big fan of synthetic oil.
Yeah.
Now, as far as this vibration, is this something that while driving at a stoplight?
Yeah, it's kind of when I'm going between maybe 40 and 55 miles an hour, I really notice it.
So, like, does the rearview mirror vibrate, too?
I feel it mostly through my foot and through the steering wheel.
Does it change if you accelerate or decelerate or just
mm-hmm.
coast?
Yeah.
It does?
Yeah, I think it's strongest between, like, 35 and 50 miles an hour.
Well, my question was, when the vibration is prevalent, is it worse if you're just accelerating or coasting or decelerating?
That's well, if I'm understanding you correctly, when I first take off from a stop, I feel it in the pedal.
Okay.
I don't feel it so much as I'm accelerating until I get up to that particular mileage. And then, you know, if I have a drink in front, it'll really shake around and the steering wheel shakes a bit. Once I get up over a certain speed, I don't notice it as much, but it's still there. I can still see my hand shaking on the steering wheel a little bit.
Okay.
A couple mechanics that I've taken it to said, oh, we don't notice anything. It's the type of deal where I feel like I'm crazy when I take it into the mechanic.
Well, the reason I'm asking is generally any vibration above 45 miles an hour is associated with tires.
Really?
But if you feel it more so as you're accelerating or the vehicle's under load, then it's in the drivetrain, which would mean the drive axles, the transmission, the drive shaft, those things.
Mm-hmm.
That's why I was trying to isolate when it was occurring.
Right. Hmm. Well, it sounds, like it's something like that then, because it does still vibrate, you know, when I'm accelerating and any other time.
Yeah.
And I have had brand new tires put on. I've had them balanced.
Right. So what I would do the next time you drive it
mm-hmm.
is accelerate kind of moderate to hard.
Okay.
And as soon as you start to feel the vibration,
mm-hmm.
let go of the accelerator pedal and see
okay.
if it goes away.
Okay.
And if it goes away, then what I would ask them to look at is the inner constant velocity joints.
Oh, inner constant velocity joints. Okay. All right.
Okay.
Thanks.
Well, good luck.
Thank you.
Thanks for the
Bye-bye.
Call. Bye. We'll go next to someone in Arcola. This is line two. Hello.
Hi there.
Yes.
My question is, I've got a 2000 GMC Sierra 4x4, and it's got the 4.8 liter gas motor in it, and it's getting about 13 miles to a gallon, and it seems like it's starting to get worse. It's losing its power, getting kind of doggy, and I've changed a fuel filter in it. That's why somebody instructed me to do that and see if that changed it, and that didn't make it any better. And actually, this is the second truck I've had. I had a 99, exact same truck, and when I got it, it was getting about 16 to 17, and within a few months, it went down to 13. And I just wondered, they're telling me it's going to cost a couple hundred dollars to check it all over, and I was hoping there's something I could do. I'm fairly mechanically inclined.
No check engine light or service engine soon light?
No, no. The only trouble I've had is the fuel cap was bad on it, and that light used to come on, but I changed the fuel cap, and I fixed that problem.
Does the fuel pump sound normal to you? It's kind of a buzzing noise.
I've never heard it, but I just noticed day before yesterday, I heard it in the morning when I was inside the cab. I could hear a buzzing, kind of, but other than that, I've never heard any kind of sound coming from the fuel pump.
Okay. Does it run okay? Does it run better in terms of acceleration when it's cold compared to at operating temperature?
No, it's about the same. It does kind of, the engine's cold, it sets for a couple hours. If you start it up and just go right to put it in drive, it will almost die. The RPMs will just set there and low. It'll go down to 200-300 RPM, and then if you give it gas, it'll shoot up and kind of spin the tires a little bit, and then it'll almost fall on its face and die again. But if you kind of let it come out of that, then it seems to run fine. It's just a pretty bad gas mileage. I don't really know what the gas mileage is supposed to be on a truck like that to begin with.
Well, when you say 13, is that in town?
Normally not in town. I usually no more than 10 or 15 mile drives through the country usually. It don't go real long distances, but it's usually not really stop and go either.
Right. Well, I would just call the dealer and or you can check on the internet and see what type of figures they typically have for those vehicles. I know, you know, some of the newer trucks are getting around 16 on the highway.
Mm-hmm.
So if you're getting 13 combined, it's not probably not that far off. Use any kind of fuel injector cleaner in the truck?
I just did. I put some of that gum out stuff in there, and I'm running it through this tank, and it's almost, if anything, it's acting like it's gotten worse.
Well, it will act worse while the injector cleaner is actually doing his job.
Oh, is that right?
Yes.
Okay. So I noticed yesterday I was in a hurry to get somewhere, and you'd have to have it almost to the floor to run 65, and any amount of letting off the pedal, it just start losing speed immediately.
Right.
And it seems also, if you're going down the highway and you get into town, it's when it's in overdrive, it doesn't want to come out of overdrive. You have to really just keep pushing the gas down. Then it'll shift out of overdrive and accelerate really well. But it shifts really hard out of overdrive. It doesn't want to come out of overdrive.
Well, there's a lot of programming that can be done to correct that.
Is there?
Yes. But really the only way you're going to answer your questions is to hook up a scan tool and monitor like the oxygen sensor and see what it's doing.
Okay.
And that's pretty representative of what the injectors are doing also.
Okay. So it wouldn't be something as simple as air filter or spark plugs or something like that?
Well, I mean, assuming those components are okay, that's really not going to affect the mileage that much, unless the air filter's totally restricted. I mean, you said...
No, it's not. It's pretty good shape.
Yeah, you could try a K&N filter. I know some people have pretty good luck with those.
Yeah. Okay.
But, yeah, you're going to have to take it in and have somebody hook up to it and check those things, unless you know somebody that's got a tool you could borrow.
No, I'll probably end up having to take it back to the dealer.
Okay.
But, all right, well, that's what I'll do then.
All right, well, thanks for the call.
Thank you.
Our guest this morning is auto mechanic Rick Karch. His business is Rick's Automotive. It's in Champaign 4 times a year, every season. He's here on the program. We talk about cars and give you a chance to call in if you're having a problem. Just tell us about it. Tell us what kind of car it is and give us the best description, and Rick will see if he can figure out something for you to try to see if we can take care of the problem. 333-9455, toll free, 800-222-9455. There, Urbana caller next. This is line number 3. Hello.
Yeah, good morning.
Mm-hmm.
I'm working on an 89 Toyota Tercel. It's got 170,000 miles on it. It runs fine. What happens, you can run it for about 20 minutes, park it, and then when you come back and try to start it up again, it starts fine, but it feels as if the brakes are all locked up. And, in fact, you can kind of fight it with the accelerator, but eventually the car will stall out. And then seems like you have to wait maybe 10 minutes, and then it will the brakes will relax, and you're able to drive again. But I was wondering if you had any thoughts as to what might be causing that.
You're certain it's the brakes?
Well, it's acting like the brakes are on.
Okay.
And
well,
when I get out of the car, I can't even really push it. So no, I don't know that it's the brakes. I don't know what it is.
That's why I'm asking. Okay.
Yeah.
The easiest way to figure it out is after you drive it and it gets into the situation that you just described where it doesn't seem like it wants to accelerate or move or roll, however you want to define it, just go out and put the back of your hand up against each of the rims in the center.
Mm-hmm.
And if a brake is dragging, you'll be able to tell by the temperature change between wheel and wheel. And once you figure out where, if the brakes are dragging, that wheel will be extremely hot. You can hardly even touch it. And then you'll have to start looking at the caliper. First thing to do is to make sure that the brake pedal has some free play to it, which means that if you just lightly touch the brake pedal with your hand, you should be able to move it a good quarter to 3/8 of an inch without any resistance. If there's no free play, as you drive the vehicle and the brake fluid heats up, it will actually be the same thing as you stepping on the brake pedal.
Oh, okay, so there, it just could be a free play problem.
It could be if it recently had a master cylinder replaced.
It looks like a new master cylinder on there. Okay.
Yeah. So I would check free play first.
Okay. There isn't a danger that there's some kind of sensor in the car that would be doing this,
no.
Is there?
No. That's why I'm... If it's associated with the brakes, no.
Okay. Thank you very much.
You're welcome.
Okay. Belgium, next. Line number 4. Hello.
Good morning, sirs.
Mm-hmm.
I've got a strange one for you. I've owned this. It's a Ranger. It's a 99-2000. That doesn't really matter. I get in the truck, go wherever I feel like going. And as I'm going down the road, every now and again, the windshield wiper goes boom, boom. Just give like one wipe.
Mm-hmm.
Then it'll stop. Go along maybe some other time. It might do 5 or 6 times. Then it'll stop. Sometimes it'll go along and it'll start going and it won't stop. Then I turn the wipers all the way on, turn the wipers all the way off, and it'll stop. Then it'll go along for a while and it'll whoop, whoop. Never, doesn't have to have any rain going or anything,
right.
Mind you.
Right.
It's the most irritating little thing, taking it to the dealer. Obviously, it doesn't happen when the dealer's there.
Right.
Is there maybe a module you can re-plug in and take out?
Anything? No, normally what it's associated with is the grounds.
The grounds.
For the turn signal or the wiper switch. A lot of times when vehicles do this, I'll just get in the car and I'll just literally beat on the steering wheel with my fist.
Good.
And a lot of times you can get the wipers to do it,
mm-hmm.
to sweep. 9 times out of 10, what it takes is a new switch.
Ah, okay. So, now, do you have to take the whole steering wheel out to do that?
Yeah, and most of them you do, the airbag and everything.
I think I'll just live with it. I think I'll just live with it.
But, yeah, that's usually what it is.
Hmm. Well, thank you very much, sir.
All right, very good.
Take care.
We'll keep going here. Next up is Champagne. This is line 1. Hello.
Hi.
Mm-hmm.
I have a problem with a van. When I drive at just low speeds in town, there's a vibration in the steering wheel. It just goes back and forth.
The steering wheel goes left, right, left, right.
Right, to a slight degree.
Front tires.
Tires, you think?
Yeah, front tires.
Oh, okay.
You could try rotating them.
Oh. This happened last summer. We took it to the dealer, and he said it was something about the brakes, and they did some machining on those brakes, and it was better for a while, and then we drove the car 1,000 miles, and it's back again. I never understood why it would be brakes if it happens when I'm not using the brakes.
Then it's not brakes.
Yeah.
The rotors, which is what the brake pads squeeze against,
uh-huh.
if you only have a vibration while braking,
uh-huh.
then it is associated with the rotors.
Okay.
If it does not occur while braking, it's the tires.
Okay. And they may be worn improperly or something?
usually if you just simply jack the vehicle up and spin the tire, you can actually see the spot where it's not perfectly round, I guess is the easiest way to explain
it.
It's just, it's a visual observation, but...
And is it, it's just an annoyance or is it unsafe?
Annoyance.
Okay. Okay, thanks.
Yeah, you're welcome.
Bye.
All right, very good. On to Lovington, line number two. Hello.
I got a 2000 Nissan Quest, and kind of like you guys' windshield wipers, I guess, that the whole dash goes dead every once in a while.
Is it digital dash or analog?
Digital. Well, wait a second.
So you got needles or numbers?
Yeah, that's a good question. It's actually not my car, so I don't stare at it all the time. I think it's needles. Because, yeah, I'm pretty sure it's needles. It's needles. It's not numbers.
Okay. First thing I would do is just make sure that the ignition switch is in the fully on position. So, in other words, once you start the vehicle, just slightly try to rotate the ignition switch clockwise, counterclockwise, just a little bit and see if you can duplicate the situation.
Okay.
If that doesn't duplicate the situation, then it's a matter of looking at the main power supply to the dash.
Okay.
A wiring-related issue.
Why didn't the car turn off if it's the switch?
Well, the switch has several different contacts within it, and it has several different outputs.
Okay.
So it has an individual wire, for example, when you're cranking the car to go to the starter.
All right. Well, I kind of suspect it may have something to do with a whole bunch of weight hanging off the keys.
Well, if anybody that hangs a lot of keys is going to have trouble with the mechanical portion of the ignition switch.
Yeah.
Guaranteed.
Hey, you got time for one more?
Sure.
I got a new Tacoma, and it has a locking rear end. It will only lock in low. Is there any reason... is that thing would get tore up if whenever I get low, I just lock it. It seems kind of silly to get stuck and then try to get out.
You mean four low?
It electronically locks the rear differential some way.
In four low?
Four low only.
Yeah. Well, that's just so that both the wheels are, in four low, obviously the likelihood of wheel spin is a little bit less, but... they're both going to be turning at the same rate then when they're locked.
Right. I just wonder if there's any... Toyota says to wait till you're stuck to lock the thing together. That just seems silly to me.
Well, generally you should not drive around in four low.
Right. Well, I do a lot because I'm off-road a lot.
So. Well, as long as you're not exceeding like 30 or 35 mile an hour or whatever... their value is in it's in the owner's manual.
Yeah. Okay, thank you.
You're welcome.
All right, thanks. Just for a second, let me go back to something you were just talking about, because this is something that long time ago I heard, and I wasn't sure whether that was really true or not, and that is you see people have these huge bunches of keys. Mm-hmm. They got all their house keys. They got all their work keys. They got a couple of car keys there. They got all kinds of stuff hanging off of this thing, and that's where they have their ignition key for the car. And someone once told me a long time ago, said, don't do that. If you have a lot of weight on there, you're going to have problems with the ignition. And you're saying, yeah, that's
guaranteed.
Actually right. Okay.
Yeah, the key and the tumblers, a lot of the tumblers are brass. They're fairly soft material. And if it's constantly at an angle being pulled down, eventually the ignition switch will get to the point where you can't start the car unless you just lift the key up just a little bit. And then it'll start just fine. And you can always tell when you get a car like that that people have hung a lot of weight on their keys. No, you should not do that.
Yeah. All right. Rick Karch is our guest. And if you have car care questions, you give us a call, 333-9455, toll-free, 800-222-9455. And next we'll talk to someone in Normal on our line four.
Hi, Rick.
Morning.
I have a 92 Saturn, and when I try to accelerate from a stop, it dies if I accelerate too quickly. And if I ease the pedal down real slow, it'll, build up enough RPM, it'll take off fine. What I do to start it after it dies is hold the pedal to the floor, starts fine, away I go. But I don't know why it's dying on me.
You don't have a check engine light?
Yeah.
Oh, okay. Well, first you have to figure out why the light's on. So you're going to have to find somebody that can hook up to the computer and retrieve that information.
Okay.
You know, it could be a throttle position sensor. So, but you're going to have to hook up to verify it.
Just intermittently on. It's most of the time the light's off. Does
right.
it matter?
No, it doesn't matter. It's still in memory in
okay,
the computer. You can still access it.
Okay, thanks. But
you're welcome.
All right. On to Champaign, line one. Hello.
Hello?
Yes.
Yes, I was just calling. I had a couple questions. One, I had an, also, speaking of a Saturn, a 99 Saturn, about 130,000 miles on it, that seems to be burning a lot of oil. And I was going to ask, I don't know if you recommended... I had seen some products that have look like sealers in them that I thought maybe I should try. You know, I could go down to one of these aftermarket places and buy it and just sort of put it in with the oil. Or I had thought about maybe I'd seen products like Prolong, which is supposed to be sort of anti-friction, maybe a thinner weight oil. I thought about trying that at my next oil change. I don't know if you recommend any of these sorts of things for problems with burning a lot of oil.
No, I don't. When does it smoke? We're talking about blue smoke now.
Just a little. That's the funny thing is, like I said, it's a 99 Saturn. It doesn't, like when I start it up, I can see a little bit come
okay.
out. And then when it's running, it just looks like you can tell it's burning a little bit, but not real bad. That's what's amazing is it seems to run pretty good, but yet I can check it and, you know, it's going through a quart of oil pretty fast.
Mm-hmm.
I'm on the interstate.
Right. Well, the first thing you need to do is have somebody do a compression and cylinder leakage test of the engine.
Oh, okay.
To determine the, basically to verify the condition of the piston rings.
Okay.
Blue smoke under acceleration is going by the piston rings. If you have blue smoke in the morning and it diminishes and finally is not visible anymore, it has to do with valve stem seals.
Ah, okay. I didn't realize
but
that. Okay.
Until you do those tests, you don't know. I mean, if you've got piston ring problems and valve stem problems, if you spend money on the valve stem seals, you may not be too happy with the results.
I see.
So
yeah, okay.
You need to verify the source of the problem.
Gotcha. No, well, that helps a lot. Because I had on that same car, too, I had one other thing was the, you know, it looks like it's water. It just every once in a while, the light will come on saying that I've got low antifreeze or, you know, low amount of liquid in there. And maybe I'll top it off with a little water antifreeze mixture, and then it'll be okay for a couple months. And then it'll go down again a little bit. That light will come back on. I was trying to figure out if it just evaporates out of there or if I definitely or if I might actually have a problem with.
Well, when you say you add, do you add to the reservoir or to the radiator?
Oh, no, I just add to the reservoir.
Okay. Well, one morning when it's cold, take the cap off the actual radiator and make sure it's full.
Oh, okay, the actual radiator, okay.
Yeah. First you want to get the engine and everything full, and then when the light comes on, is the reservoir actually down toward the minimum mark?
But it is, though. That reservoir is down towards the minimum, yes.
Yeah, so you may have a very, very small coolant leak that you really don't notice.
Yeah, okay.
And as you shut the car off and it's hot and it cools down, the fluid contracts, and it creates a low-pressure area within the cooling system, or a vacuum, if you want to refer to it that way,
mm-hmm.
and it actually pulls coolant from that bottle. And then when you start it back up, of course, the vacuum goes away, and it establishes pressure, and the pressure is what helps raise the boiling point. So every time it cools down, if it's low on coolant, it'll draw coolant in from that reservoir. So you might just look around with a really good flashlight and see if you see any coolant visible.
Gotcha. Very good. Oh, and I don't know, do you have time for just one last general question, sort of?
Yeah, sure.
Yeah,
sure.
On this, I have an older Chevy Celebrity, like 1985, and I thought I just wasn't sure at the intervals for changing the transmission fluid. You know, it's got an automatic transmission, and I didn't know if that's that big of a deal. You know, I don't drive it that much, and so I haven't really bothered to change the transmission fluid in a while, but I don't know how important that is. Or
well, have you ever changed it?
Well, I haven't had the car. I've only had the car probably about a year. Cause actually, I inherited it from my grandmother. But
okay. How many miles are on it?
It just got about 90,000 miles.
Okay. If the transmission has never been serviced, I wouldn't touch it.
Oh, okay.
because a lot of times what happens when you service a transmission, all that particles that are in there are in suspension and in the pan and filter area, you disrupt things. And sometimes you dislodge material, and then you have transmission problems.
Okay.
So if it's never been serviced and it's got 90,000 on it, I wouldn't touch it.
So don't even bother changing.
Well, it's going to be like flipping a coin.
Yeah, I see what you mean.
It's either going to be okay or it's going to create problems.
Or it's going to create problems. All right. Well, no, that makes me feel good because, you know, if it goes out, it goes out. But at least I can't blame myself for not doing anything.
Yeah, you might ask me. I'm sure she's got all her records.
That's true. I'll go back and see if she has the records. And if it has been serviced, then I might be okay going ahead and having it fully replaced.
To answer your first question, every 30,000.
Okay. So usually you go about every 30,000 miles on those. Okay. Well, great. Well, thanks very much.
All right. Thank you. Right. On to Champagne, another Champagne person, line two.
Good morning. Mm-hmm. We have a 91 Sable wagon with about 72,000 miles, and I got a couple of questions about the glass part of the lift gate, not big ones. First one is that the struts don't seem to hold it open anymore, particularly in colder weather. Is the only thing that can be done with that to replace them?
Yes.
About how much do they cost?
Well, I don't know. I would just call a parts store and just inquire. I mean, some of them are $40, some of them are $80. I've seen them more than that, you know. It's not that difficult to replace them. You just, if you're going to do it yourself, make sure you get some kind of board or somebody help you to hold that lid up, because as soon as you pop one off, it's going to come down.
Yeah, I think one end of it just pops off.
Yeah, it does. That's right.
And the other one has a little metal tab on it.
Yes, they're quite simple to change.
All right, the other thing has to do with the defroster strip. Specifically, it has a couple of tabs that have been soldered or glued on so that the plugs from the rest of the car can contact it to provide power.
On the windshield, on the window itself?
On the window itself, yes.
Okay. All right.
They just stick out at right angles.
Mm-hmm.
And one of them has broken off. Is there some kind of solder or electrically conductive glue that I can use to reattach that?
Yes, there is. There's actually repair kits that will take care of the little wires. They aren't really wires, but they're just a material that's been painted on the glass. Now, as far as what you're referring to, where the electrical wire actually attaches to the glass.
Yes.
The first thing I usually try is clean that area really well, and I'll actually try to solder it with some flux, because most of the adhesives can't handle that little extra weight of that wire. So I usually try to solder it first.
Does that risk cracking the glass, though?
No. No. No, as long as you use flux.
Okay. Would I have to take the whole window off to do that?
No, I do it right on the car. Yeah.
Right?
Mm-hmm.
And what else do you try?
Then the only other thing is you could try some kind of adhesive and then try that window defogger repair kit. It's basically metallic paint. You're just providing a conductor between the glass and the tab that's come off. So you could glue it and make sure it's clean, of course, around the perimeter of it, and then use that metallic paint to try to conduct the electricity from the grid to the wire tab.
All right. Thank you very much.
You're welcome.
All right. And line three is next. This is also Champagne. Hello.
Good morning.
Mm-hmm.
I have a 2002 Chevy Tahoe. And I notice when I decelerate or when I'm coming to a speed zone and slow down that the headlights dim considerably, I think. And also I find that the dashboard lights are fluttering slightly. And I took it to the dealer, and they put it on the diagnostic computer, and they said they found nothing. Is that normal?
No. No, it's not normal. So there's probably... My first suspicion is you need to put a voltmeter on the car and go and drive it. And usually what I'll do is I'll just run the wires up under the windshield wiper blade and just position the meter right there and just go drive it.
Okay.
You know, and as you accelerate, generally what you're looking for is 13.5 to 14.5 volts. And then as you decelerate, chances are what you're seeing is it's dropping.
Mm-hmm. Like, yeah, I especially in the of course, in the wintertime running the heater,
we have
and
more things
in the summertime running the compressor, the air conditioner.
Right.
I know that there's quite a drain on the system
mm-hmm.
by doing that, and I just feel that it's kind of unnerving to see that slight flutter in the dashboard, especially, and also when you decelerate, it's almost like you're flashing your headlights at someone by
right.
by the headlights going down.
Well, you should have a voltmeter on the dash.
Yes, I do.
Okay, what is it?
I don't notice any fluctuation in that voltmeter.
Whatsoever?
No, none whatsoever.
Okay, well, first verify that the alternator is doing what it's supposed to do.
Okay.
And if it is, then I would be looking at grounds and electrical
yes.
connections.
Okay. Well, I was wanting to get this situation corrected because I'm going to soon be out of warranty. So I would like for them to find it or correct it before I'm out of this warranty period.
Right.
Okay.
Okay.
All right. Thanks a lot.
Very
sure.
good. Well, thanks for the call. Well, we have about 15 minutes left in this hour of Focus with Rick Karch, auto mechanic, Rick's Automotive in Champaign. He's generally here four times a year, and we give you the chance to call in and ask questions about the cars. In your life, if you're having a problem, you can describe it to us, and Rick will see if he can do a little diagnosis. 333-9455, toll-free, 800-222-9455. Well, we don't have any callers right at the moment. Maybe I could just ask you to talk just generally about general sort of maintenance now that we are heading into the time of year when it's going to be cold.
Well, I guess the first thing that comes to most people's mind is maybe has to do with the battery, the ability of the vehicle to start. My general recommendation on batteries is that if the battery is 5 years old or older, that you just change it. Just buy a new one. Batteries obviously fail in the winter. They also fail in the summer. So, but they do have a life expectancy, and I just consider them a maintenance item. Cooling system. One of the problems with the newer cars now is there's so many different types of coolant used. There's DextCool that's referred to typically with General Motors products. It's supposed to be 100,000-mile 5 year, I think it's 5 years, but it's, I know about the mileage. And Ford has their own, and Nissan, and Toyota, and Honda. And it's very important that if you need to add coolant to your system, that you add half coolant and half water. 50-50 mix will give you protection down to about 35 below. The other thing that is very important is, I feel, is the wiper blades, the windshield washer operation, and, of course, all the exterior lights. Make sure all the lights work properly. Another thing is tires. Tires, as far as rotation is concerned, a lot of manufacturers recommend at every 7,500 miles. Before you rotate tires or have tires rotated, they should measure the tires and actually verify that they do need to be rotated. The front tires will wear out more quickly than the rear tires. There's more load up there. There's more weight. Tires, obviously, are an important consideration. The other thing, if you're taking trips, you need to give some thought to extra items to put in the trunk from a safety standpoint. Flashlight, blanket, maybe a shovel, some sand or salt if you should happen to get stuck, things like that. If you do get stuck in the snow and you obviously in a position where you can't walk and you need to start the car and shut the car off and just to keep warm, you need to make sure that the tailpipe area is perfectly cleared of snow so that there's not any carbon monoxide related problems that can occur. And I think those are, you know, the main things. I guess just the most important thing is that look in your owner's manual, see what the maintenance recommendations are. Generally, with all cars, it's every 15,000 as a service. In between those times, it's just your normal oil and filter services.
Okay.
So as long as you keep a car up to date, maintained properly, you shouldn't have any problems in the winter.
One thing you mentioned to an earlier caller, and I think over the years it's been one of the things that you've always said you recommend is fuel injector cleaner. If indeed you've got injectors on
yes.
your car, you suggest that you buy a bottle of the stuff, when you fill up the tank with gasoline, put a bottle of this in, and you said
four
times a year. So every time Rick's here, you should go out and do that. what would be, if your injectors are clogged, what sort of symptoms would you see from that? Would it just be poor mileage?
Generally, that's what you'll see. If they get really, restricted. Basically, we're only talking about basically what an injector is. This is what squirts fuel into the engine. And it's a solenoid, and it's operated electrically. And the computer turns the injector on and turns the injector off. And the opening, when the injector is open, a lot of times is only 4/1000ths of an inch. It's very small. So it doesn't take too much. Every time you shut the vehicle off, there's going to be a little residue of fuel. And, of course, if you've ever spilled gasoline on the garage floor or the driveway, you'll notice that it leaves a discolor or a stain. It's the same thing that's happening every time you shut the car off. So, yeah, four times a year. Because some of these injectors, it can get quite expensive to put injectors in these cars.
Okay. Well, we got some other callers here. We'll take as many as we can in the time that remains. And we'll go next to somebody on the toll-free line, our line four, right here. Go ahead.
Good morning.
Yes.
I have a situation that I don't know if I need to follow through further on. A short time ago, the service engine soon light came on, and I took the car in, and they put it on a computer, and it indicated that the throttle position sensor needed to be dealt with, so they put a new one in.
Okay.
And the car had run as though the idle was just a little bit high. So they put that in, and it seemed okay briefly, and then but the service engine light intermittently comes on and off. And they checked it out and decided, well, it probably is just one of those things that you just have to live with unless you want to explore in great depth. The computer was replaced a year ago. And so now I don't know whether, because I think it's mostly when the engine is cold, when I turned it on at first, it seems to run a little bit as though the idle is a little high, but I think that it doesn't do that all the time once I've been running it a while, but I'm not quite sure of that. I'm wondering if this is something I should just live with or it's something I need to explore again.
I would find out why the light's coming back on. Okay. That information is accessible.
Okay.
They can retrieve that.
Okay.
But yes.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
All right. Thank you. To, let's see, Oakwood next, line number one.
Good morning.
Yes, hi.
Kind of the same rough scenario. Bought a Tahoe new in 2003, and that first winter noticed a slight smell of antifreeze when we turned on the heater. It wasn't overpowering or unbearable, just maybe irritable. This year it's still there. We took it in that first year and asked them to check it, and they said there was no loss of pressure in any of the coolant system. And so I was wondering, is this possible, or should I take it back in and say, hey, fix it, or what?
Well, you understand the basic heating system of the heater core is in the dash. It's like a small radiator. The coolant goes through it, the air goes through it, and that's what gets heated.
Right.
Okay. So anytime you have a coolant odor in the vehicle, there's only one way it can get there, and that's by the heater core leaking.
Okay. All righty. Well, we'll see if we can try it again with them then.
Yeah, sometimes it's kind of hard. Sometimes you have to remove a few panels. Or some of those you can actually get some of the resistor boards out for the fan and actually be able to visually look at the heater core. Some you can't. You just, unfortunately, the dash and everything has to come out.
Okie dokie. Well, we'll give him another shot then.
Okay.
All right, thank you.
Sure.
And again, to another caller. This is Urbana. It's line number two. Hello.
Hi. Rick, about a month or month and a half ago, my mother got this notice about a recall on her Chrysler Concord. It's a 93, she says. And she just read this to me. I have a vague image of what their letter said, but it had to do with the transmission and the ignition switch, and they put in a rod to fix it. Did you hear about that recall at all?
No, not that one.
Specifically.
Well, I mean, I have all those bulletins. I can look at it, but they're...
Well, my concern is, I mean, it's been 11 years ago, and so if it were your parent, how much confidence would you have in this fix?
Well, the fix was done when?
I would guess in the last 4 weeks.
Okay. Were there any problems prior
to
the repair?
No, I had not noticed anything. It was like this would slip out of gear and into neutral or something like that.
Right. Well, what recalls are is the manufacturer is aware of a problem or a potential problem with the vehicle. And what they're doing is they're providing a service to you as a consumer and an owner to not allow you to experience that problem. So they're trying to do everything they can to make the vehicle as safe and as dependable and obviously make you happy with the vehicle. And that's the purpose of the recalls. So as long as the recall has been done, the factory and their engineers have tested it and tested it and tested it, and it should correct the problem. So as far as confidence in the vehicle, I would have 100%.
Thanks for your opinion.
Okay.
All right, very good. Other calls are welcome. We certainly have time for a couple. 333-9455, toll-free, 800-222-9455. Earlier in the show, someone called in. We were talking a little bit about oil, and you said that you like synthetic oil.
Mm-hmm.
What exactly is the difference between natural oil and synthetic oil?
Well, I guess the simplest way to explain it is it definitely protects a little bit better. But the thing that I like about synthetic oil is you may have seen the commercials years ago Mobil 1 had where they'd pour different oils and one would be at 30 below and the synthetic was at 30 below. And the synthetic oil, as far as the viscosity or the thickness of the oil, it really doesn't change that much with temperature. So it provides very good protection. And with today's engines, with the upper valve train, the valves and everything up high in an engine, it's kind of the last place to get oil. And I usually recommend it. Obviously, Porsche, BMW, that's all they recommend now for their cars is synthetic.
Uh-huh. And it's more expensive.
Oh, yes.
Right?
Yes.
Now, do you also get, can you go further between changes?
Yes, you can.
All right. So it's a little bit of a trade-off. Yeah, you do pay more, but you get more miles.
Yeah, if you have a car that sits outside in the winter, I think it's a good idea to put synthetic in it in the fall. Mm-hmm. And it's a lot easier on the engine, and I feel it adds to longevity of the engine.
And I think you said that there were some oils that recommend, they have different formulations if you have a German car and
yes.
if you have a Japanese car.
Yes.
What's the difference?
Well, every manufacturer, through their engineering, have determined what is the best oil for their engine. Some say 5W30. I know these numbers probably don't mean anything to most people, but I'll try to explain it quickly. Like a 5W30, it's basically talking about the temperature range in which the oil will flow properly, which we were talking a little bit initially about your question about synthetics. And 10W30 is for a little bit higher ambient or outside temperatures. In your owner's manual, there'll be a chart, and it'll have lines going across it, and it'll have temperature, and it'll pretty well show you. But generally, the higher the number, the thicker the oil. So like a 40-weight oil is thicker than a 10-weight. Hmm. And they're usually combination oils so that they can cover a range. But like Hondas, I think the new ones are 5W20. Some cars want 1030. Some want 530. Hmm. So
first of all, the bottom line is say, well, look what the manufacturer recommends and do that.
Yes, use whatever they recommend because it's also in your best interest in terms of not only longevity of the engine, but for fuel efficiency, too. That's all been calculated in. Yeah. And if you don't know, like David said, just look in the book. A lot of times right on the cap where you'd add oil, it'll tell you what to put in there as well.
Okay. Let's take one more at least. Or we have somebody in Urbana, line 4. Hello.
Hello. I have a 88 Toyota Corolla. And recently, when I ran it for like 20 miles or so, I can smell this burning smell from the front hood. So I open the hood and check it. I can hear something boiling, but I'm not exactly sure if it's the radiator or the cooler. I just wonder if you could give me some clue about it.
Well, what does the temperature gauge do? The gauge inside the car says cold,
hot. Oh, the engine.
Is it past?
Probably somewhere in the middle, but not... not terribly high.
I see. Well, anytime there's a boiling,
mm-hmm.
It's typically associated with the cooling system. You're not noticing any smoke or anything?
Yeah, there is smoke, actually.
Mm-hmm. Okay. When you smell it, is it kind of a real pungent, terrible odor, or does it smell like oil?
It is smell like something's burning, so, yeah.
Well.
Not regular oil smell.
Okay. Well, I would just take it in and have someone check it then for you, because a lot of those Toyotas, the valve cover gasket, which is the uppermost gasket on the engine,
mm-hmm.
it will allow oil, if it's leaking, to get down under the exhaust, and it will definitely smoke and smell.
I see. So it's not a like oil change problem, but it's more serious one.
More of a gasket-related problem.
Okay.
But, yeah, I would just take it in. Or next time you go in for an oil change, just ask them to take a look at it for you. See
and
if they see anything visually.
I wonder if they could repeat the problem because it takes running a car for a while.
Oh, they'll be able to tell. If there's oil leaks, they'll see that.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Okay, thanks.
You're welcome.
All right, thank you. Well, there, we're going to have to stop. I'm sorry. We have one person that we can't take. We just run to the end of the time. I'm sure in a couple months, Rick will be back, and we'll do it again.
Sure.
But for a moment, thank you very much.
Thank you.
Rick Karch from Rick's Automotive Service in Champaign. He's generally here with us every season to talk about car care. The program is made possible with support from the Art Mart in Lincoln Square Mall, Urbana. The Art Mart is pleased to support public radio in East Central Illinois. The broadcast is also made possible today with support from Christie Clinic Association, with offices in Champaign, Urbana, Rantoul, and Mahomet. Christie Clinic, medicine for your life. Journalist Jonathan Randall, author of the book Osama, The Making of a Terrorist, will be the guest coming up today on the Afternoon Magazine in the 1 o'clock hour. He is a former foreign correspondent for the Washington Post, and in this book he traces the birth and growth of bin Laden's jihad against America in the book, which one reviewer has described as a biography of hatred. Celeste Quinn is the host for the show, and the interview is in the 1 o'clock hour. It's the Afternoon Magazine. The program gets underway at noon here on AM 580. In the next hour of this show, we will be talking about the life of the man that is often regarded as the greatest playwright ever to have lived, William Shakespeare. Our guest will be Stephen Greenblatt. He teaches at Harvard University. He's author of a new biography titled Will in the World, How Shakespeare Became Shakespeare. That'll be in the next hour. Of course, we'll have news at 1 minute past. First, though, an update on commodity markets, so please stay tuned.
The Carl Center for Rural Health and Farm Safety is proud to underwrite agricultural programming on WILL. The center helps residents of rural communities with education and training in farm safety. For more information, call 217-383-4606.
With this update on the markets at 10:59, I'm Jay Pierce. Good morning. While Chicago Board of Trade soybean futures are sharply higher following the U.S. Department of Agriculture's confirmation of Asian soybean rust in Louisiana. And that's a story we're following today, and we'll have more on, of course, during the closing market.